Abstention from false speech can be practiced without practicing truthfulness, only by abstaining from speech itself altogether. But abstention from false speech is by no means enough. Like all the other precepts, the fourth precept must be observed in its positive form as well as in its negative form. When one says that speech is important because it is the principal vehicle of communication between man and man, one is really speaking of truthful speech, and of truthful speech only. Untruthful speech cannot be a vehicle for communication, so that in any human society in which untruthful speech predominates, communication will break down. Without truthful speech, there can be no civilization and culture. Indeed, there can be no spiritual life and no spiritual community. Without truthfulness, society itself cannot exist, so that whoever is guilty of false speech in fact undermines the foundations of society. A liar is an antisocial element, especially in a court of justice. This is why telling lies in a court of justice, when one has been called upon to speak the truth, is for Buddhism the paradigmatic form of false speech, just as speaking the truth in those circumstances is the paradigmatic form of truthfulness, as we saw in the case of the Buddha's teaching to Chunda, the silversmith, about the threefold cleansing. The bearing of false witness is such a terrible offense because it renders the administration of justice impossible, and if justice cannot be administered, society ceases to be a moral order, the rule of right being replaced by the rule of might. Bearing false witness is not the only form of false speech that undermines the foundations of society. George Orwell's newspeak, indeed any kind of insincere jargon, can have the same devastating effect. Confucius, when asked what he would put first if entrusted with the administration of a state, replied, "The rectification of terms." In similar vein, what Nietzsche appreciated most about Zarathustra, the real Zarathustra, not the product of his own philosophic poetic imagination, was that his teaching upheld truthfulness as the supreme virtue. To tell the truth and to shoot well with arrows, that is Persian virtue, he tells us, as though these two things comprised both the law and the prophets. The Dhammapada says much the same thing, though in negative rather than positive terms, when it declares, "There is no evil that cannot be done by a lying person who has transgressed one precept and who holds in contempt the world beyond." As if to say that a man who tells lies and who does not recognize the existence of a higher world of moral and spiritual values is capable of breaking every other precept. One of the simplest yet most important forms of abstention from false speech and cultivation of truthfulness is that of factual accuracy. This consists in telling what one has seen, for example, or what one has heard, with scrupulous fidelity to the facts as they actually occurred, neither adding or subtracting anything, nor exaggerating or minimizing anything, and without failing to recount any relevant circumstances. The observance of the fourth precept, even in this limited sense, is extremely difficult, and there is no doubt that we need to school ourselves in factual accuracy much more rigorously if we are to have any hope of observing this precept in its subtle, refined, and advanced forms. On numerous occasions, I have been both astonished and dismayed at the careless manner in which some of my own remarks have been reported, or verbal messages delivered, even by those from whom I had reason to expect greater scrupulousness in this regard. Such carelessness can be not only a source of general uncertainty and confusion, but also of serious misunderstanding between one person and another. In repeating to one person what has been said by another, one cannot, therefore, take too much trouble to ensure that one repeats what was said and repeats it in such a way as to convey both the spirit and the letter of the other person's utterance since otherwise a breach of the fourth precept will very likely become a breach of the seventh as well. There are many other points that could be made in connection with the fourth precept, but most of them are points I have already made on other occasions. Before telling you of which precious stone or precious metal the pillar of the fourth precept is made, I shall, therefore, make a point which I have never made before. Though it does not concern one's personal observance of the fourth precept, it is, nonetheless, a point of very great importance. When we speak the truth, we do, of course, expect to be believed, since otherwise no communication can take place. Similarly, we should believe others when they speak the truth. Next to killing a man, perhaps the worst possible thing you can do to him, and this is the point I want to make, is not to believe him when he is speaking the truth. Not to believe him when he is speaking the truth negates his identity as a social being and disrupts human solidarity. Such disbelief is in fact an act of violence. It is not enough, therefore, that we should speak the truth. We should also believe others when they speak it, especially within the spiritual community. This means that we shall have to develop sufficient awareness and sensitivity to tell when another person really is speaking the truth, since otherwise we may unintentionally do them a great wrong. The fourth precept is a pillar of pearl, if you can imagine such a thing. It is a pillar of pearl because in order to find pearls, one must dive into the depths of the ocean. Similarly, one has to dive very deep to discover the truth, even in the most obvious factual sense. And until one has discovered it, one can hardly speak it.